The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I do believe that there is carryance over to improved performance. One of the ways to explore that is a Wim Hof thing that he does is do a max set of push-ups. Mm-hmm. And let's say you get 22. Then do a Wim Hof breathing cycle and then hold your breath. Don't breathe at all and do as many push-ups as you can. And even though you're more fatigued from already having done a max set, most people will exceed their previous number.
Yeah.
Because you've oxygenated your whole body. Huh. I never used to be able to swim from a length of a swimming pool underwater.
Yep.
I can do that very easily now. After a Wim Hof cycle, I can't do it just jumping in the pool. And it's something that we're going to continue to explore and expand with our athletes.
We are here because we know the outcomes in our lives are within our control. That taking absolute ownership of how we eat, sleep, train, think, and connect with each other is how we'll optimize our health and happiness. That chasing excellence is how we grab hold of what is possible. Our mission is to live on the run, always chasing, never stopping. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Chasing Excellence. Ben just made a funny face. That's why I'm laughing. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm doing very well. We are going to talk today about something actually we've hinted at it before. You've talked about your experience with Wim Hof, and it's definitely, you know, in the water supply to a degree. Hmm. We're going to talk about breath work. I think breath work is fascinating, and I know almost nothing about it. So I'm excited to dive into this to pick your brain a little bit and hear what you've been experimenting with, both for yourself and your athletes. I think one of the things that one of the first things that popped into my mind is I think many folks will know the Whiteboard Daily Instagram account run by a buddy of mine named Carl. He did something relatively recently, a couple of weeks ago. It caught my eye. He was sort of drawing what is the familiar kind of hierarchy of fitness. I'm sure that there's a term to it that I'm forgetting, but where nutrition's on the bottom, metabolic conditioning, gymnastics, weightlifting, and sport is at the top. And the thing that he was drawing, what he was kind of pointing to, is this idea that actually breath work is on the bottom of that, right? It's the base. It's the foundation of everything that comes above it. And that's pretty new. That was one of the first times that I'd seen anybody kind of combine those things together. And so I just wanted to throw this out to you and see where you're at as it relates to breath work. Is it in your mind the foundation? Is it the base? Is it somewhere else? Is it not included at all? Where should we start? Where have you started as it relates to thinking about working on breath work?
Cool. Yeah. I think breath work is fascinating, and I've started to explore it. So I think this popped up like maybe a couple of years ago, where was someone like people were asking about it, and I was like, I had a default. I was like, listen, I don't.
Yeah.
They were like, nasal breathing. Like, what do you think about nasal breathing? I was like, I honestly can't really speak to it because I haven't done it very. It reminds me of a story of this woman brings her child to Gandhi and says, can you tell my child to stop eating sugar? Mm. And Gandhi says, come back in 30 days. So she comes back in 30 days and she said, can you tell my son not to eat sugar? And he turns to his son and says, son, do not eat sugar. And she's like super confused. She's like, what's the deal? Why couldn't you just tell him that 30 days ago? And he's like, because I needed 30 days to stop eating sugar.
So, got it. Got it.
So while I've experienced some breath work stuff, I'm kind of where Gandhi is. I'm still in the novice stage of this. So yep. I'm not going to pretend to be an expert. I'm happy to share my experience and what I'm doing with the athletes.
Yep.
But I am far from an expert. Where I am right now in the journey is I've worked with a Wim Hof coach for probably maybe four or five times in person. I've done a few cold exposures, done some of the Wim Hof breathing practices. And then I've now kind of like immersed myself a little bit deeper. I've done a form of Wim Hof breathing for 100 days.
Hmm.
So I'm actually like right now is the 100 day mark. And that's 100 days inside of, you know, it's about 3.5 months. I've never missed 2 days in a row. And the least I've done in a week is 5 days in a week. So I always do at least 5 days a week. Usually it's 7.
Got it.
It's been amazing. It's been transformative. Again, I'm super novice at this. It's opened my eyes to explore some other things. So I've read, I'm going to blank on his name, but it's a book called Breath. I can't remember. James Nestor.
I think that's right.
Yep. I highly, highly, highly recommend it to every one of our listeners. It should be on one of the, you know, the top 20 books that people in this space should be reading in my mind. It's fascinating. We all breathe wrong. How could that possibly be? But we do.
Yep.
It's opened my eyes to some other communities and some other ways. So I started off with Wim Hof, then went into some of like meditative box breathing, some of the Navy SEAL type stuff, what they do. Explored a little bit of like just breath hold stuff and like deep sea divers and what they've done. And again, I've only dabbled like a session or two here or there and all these other ones. The only one I've consistently practiced for 100 days, I don't say 100 days straight, but it's pretty close to that, is Wim Hof.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly enough, kind of speaking of that Navy SEAL one, when I went out and spoke to the Navy SEALs a couple of years ago, and we were sharing kind of practices on mental training and mental practices, we were like railroad tracks. We were super aligned in everything that we were doing, which was more like, I don't think they learned anything from me. And I just got like a total vote of confidence for what we were doing with our athletes.
Yep.
But the only discrepancy was we were just kind of dabbling very, very lightly in breath work at the time. And they were like, this is mental training. This is how we do mental training. This is the foundation of it. So maybe at a really high level, and we talk about this on a podcast in other forms and fashions, but the idea is there's a lot of things. So it's about using all of your lungs. It's about accessing the autonomic nervous system. It's about shifting, controlling when you go from the parasympathetic to the sympathetic nervous system. And that's what they really use it for, is they put their elite fighters in really high stress situations. So for example, when I went out there to talk to those guys afterwards, the SEAL team member that invited me out there went out to dinner with him, and I was just picking his brain left and right. And one of the questions I asked him was, what's the hardest evolution that they call like their training pieces, like their training sessions, evolutions? What's the hardest evolution that you had to experience through BUDS or SQT or any of the training things up until like when you actually got out of and you had your trident, you were part of the fighting force. And he talked about what they had to do in training. And it might have been when he was a SEAL at this point, but I'm probably going to get the specifics wrong. But the way I remember it was they do a night dive. So full scuba at night, pitch dark in the San Diego Harbor. They start in near Coronado Island. They start in San Diego Harbor, where these huge, massive battleships are, highly trafficked. And what they have to do is underwater, pitch black. The only thing that they can see lit up is the glow light of their watch with a compass on it.
Got it.
And they have to stay super focused for hours underwater. Think how long that would seem to hit a buoy about 2 miles out. When they hit that buoy, they then turn another and go another, to make a 90 degree right hand turn and go hit another buoy. They miss the buoy, they miss the other buoy. And like, they're kind of like out. But the scariest part of this is you can't see anything else and your mind starts to play tricks on you. Yeah. And they know that the sharks hang out on the other side underneath battleships where there's not as much of a current right by the keel and the skeg. They have to swim under that. In their minds, they're like, I'm going to swim right into the open mouth of a shark.
Mm-hmm.
And then during the swims, they'll be like an hour and a half into the swim, just basically in this meditative state. And something bigger than a human being will like knock into them.
Mm-hmm.
And what they have to do is they have to control their breathing and their heart rate so they don't spin out of control and use up all their oxygen.
Yeah.
So the only way you can get yourself out of that fight or flight, holy shit, I might die right now, back into this, it's cool, I'm good, is through breath work. Mm. And that was really eye-opening for me. And that's one of the things that kind of pulled me into this world. That along with you hear like a, Laird Hamilton and Brian McKenzie and all these other guys talking about breath work. And, there's a few really rogue coaches that have done pretty intense breath work to get some good performances. Yep. And then on top of that, I have a mild case of asthma. So when I go get tested, I have the lung capacity of like a, I'm 44 years old right now, but I have a lung capacity of like a 68 year old, even though I've done Ironman triathlons and CrossFit every day in my life. So any ability to kind of get more access to my lung power is kind of exciting to me. Yep. So that's kind of where I got started through this work. Again, kind of feel like I'm just a novice. Like I'm just getting my feet wet in this thing. But it's opened my eyes to a lot, a lot. Mostly when you do this deep breathing practice, and there's all these different things. So it just kind of brings some color to what breath practice means. It could be anything from cover one nostril, breathe in, breathe out through that nostril, cover the other nostril, breathe in throughout through that nostril. It's a very popular piece of breath work. Another one is box breathing, which is breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, rinse, wash, repeat. The Navy SEAL version of that is the same, but they actually find that they can get themselves into an even faster and more deeper parasympathetic state with a 6 second exhale and a 2 second hold. I actually really like that one a lot. It really is. If you ever, your kids are bugging you, or you had a stressful day at work, when you pull in the driveway before you go in the house, or you're about to go into a really big meeting, to get yourself out of that reactive fight or flight state and into a place where you can have higher levels of consciousness, that can help a lot. And then there's this other process, other practice called overbreathing, which is Wim Hof falls in the category of overbreathing, which is aggressive inhalations and exhalations for a prolonged period of time, followed by a breath hold. And you repeat that cycle 3, 4, 5, 6 times. And it gets you, everything from into a really incredibly deep meditative state, much deeper than a lot of people would say you get from like a 4 day silent meditate, like literally don't speak to anyone, go in the woods and just meditate for 4 days. In 5 to 10 minutes, you can get a deeper meditative state through this practice. But then also like Wim Hof has shown that, you can start to gain access to your autonomic nervous system, which means the autonomic nervous system is the parts of the body that just kind of run on their own. Like the muscular, like you make your muscles move by thoughts, by intention, but you don't do that with your heart. You don't do that with your digestion. You don't do that with your immune system. Those are just autonomic. Mm-hmm. Through this breath practice, he's shown that you can gain access to that and you can control your internal body temperature, you can control your immune system. So the point where this is kind of the famous story, they injected him with E. coli in a laboratory setting, controlled setting, and they watched his immune system fight it off without him getting sick. And like, oh my God, you're crazy. That's amazing. You're a mutant. Like you shouldn't exist. You're one in a million. He's like, absolutely not. I train, I can teach others to do this. He's from the Netherlands. Oh, that's my Netherlands accent. Which by the way, like the Netherlands, the Dutch, mm-hmm. like Deutschland, like Deutschland's Germany, like, what it, like what it, there's a lot of different words for that country.
That's where you're going with that?
Yeah. Yes. That's my tangent. All right. Pulling back.
Got it.
Yeah. And so he trained this group of people. He's like, give me 5 days with these people. I'm going to bring them over to the mountains. I'm going to teach them this breath work. We're going to do cold exposures. They're like, no, you don't have 5 days. You don't have a week. You got 3 days. And he taught people in 3 days how to fight off E. coli without getting sick, while the control group all got sick.
Yep.
And it's fairly fascinating stuff when you dive into this, what is available to us through some intentional breathing.
Yeah. Okay. So, lots of questions, but early on in that, you said something that I think, you know, if you can unpack it as best you can, again, respecting that you're still figuring this out as we go too, you said most of us are breathing wrong. Mm-hmm. Can you just explain that a little bit? Cause that's sort of, to me, it reminds me of when we started doing CrossFit and again, Brian McKenzie, probably not a coincidence, would go around the country telling people that they were running wrong. And I thought that was so fascinating because it was one of those things that people just thought like, oh, yeah. I've got feet. I just run. And there's no way for me to do this incorrectly. And yet what Brian did, what CrossFit, all those things, and Romanoff too, would be like, nope, actually you're running incorrectly and here's the correct way. And so that's what I think about is how can I be breathing wrong?
Yeah.
Right. I've been doing this for my entire life. How could I be doing it wrong? So what does that mean to be breathing wrong, or that most of us are breathing wrong?
So Brian kind of exposing that everyone's running wrong in the CrossFit community is the reason we are running incorrectly is because our environment set us up to do so. Is these running companies created these huge, massive heel cushion sneakers so that we would feel comfortable heel striking. And whenever your foot goes out in front of you and you strike with your heel first, and once you are exposed to this, you can't not see it. It's crazy. It's like, all I see is broken people. Like, oh my God, it causes so many injuries and so many slow people and so much lack of efficiency in their running form. If your foot is in front of your center of mass, you are actively putting on the brake with every single step. And imagine jump roping and having your heels be the first thing that hit the ground when you jump rope. Like no one in their right mind would do that. Everyone else would do with the way that kids run, the way that Usain Bolt runs, and the way that the winner of the Boston Marathon runs. Meaning, what I mean by that is inherently built into our DNA is to run with this mechanics. And then similarly, that is the fastest person in the world and the person that are the best at the long distance stuff do this as well. The people that do it incorrectly are all of us.
Yes.
It's the same thing with our breathing. So, but it's our environment that's created us to breathe in this form and fashion.
Mm-hmm.
There are tribes, there are ancestral groups that will actually get their, they'll actually close them. So the breathing thing is we all are mouth breathers. Mm-hmm. We're not supposed to breathe through our mouth. Okay. We're supposed to breathe through our nose. And breath through your nose is, that is the way that air is supposed to travel into our body. You're supposed to get food through your mouth and air through your nose. That's kind of the way it's set up.
Got it.
What's happened is through my take on this is that it's through the foods that we've eaten. It's distorted our jaws for really crowded. It's why we have dental issues. There's a guy named Weston Price who was a dentist. He's like, why all the hell am I seeing all these like crowded teeth all of a sudden? People are extracting teeth and braces. Mm. And when in the primate world, that doesn't exist except for in humans. Like we're the only primates that happens to. And hunter-gatherer civilizations that don't eat processed foods don't have this. They have perfect teeth. They never brush their teeth. They never have cavities. It's like, and I use the word never, like, of course there's exceptions to everything, right? Like the guy that knocked his face out with a rock and whatever it is. But generally speaking, the norms in these societies are perfectly straight teeth and really wide jaw lines.
Mm.
And that's the way we're supposed to be. But what's happened is once they introduce processed foods to those hunter-gatherer civilizations in one generation, and actually it'll happen in about a decade, the narrowing of the jawline, the roof of the mouth goes up. And when the jawline narrows and the roof of the mouth goes up, it collapses our nasal cavity. And that's why you get like, I have it. I have really hard breathing through my nose for my entire life. I don't have access to my nose. It's because of that. So what we need to do is just like any muscle is regain the musculature in the nasal cavity to be able to breathe the way we're supposed to breathe. So that's why we breathe wrong. And I got exposed to Weston Price through like paleo literature, but it never led into breathing. It was always like food. And I loved it. You can look at the before and after pictures. Like just Google Weston Price dental. Actually, if you just put in that, it'll probably pop right up. And then Google image it and you'll see what I'm talking about. It's really fascinating.
Hmm. That is interesting. So then is it... What is ultimately, what are the Navy SEALs, what are athletes trying to accomplish by doing breathwork. The thing that popped in my head when you were talking about the Navy SEALs is, and I don't know if this is the right term, but stress management, the ability to kind of regulate yourself. Is that roughly what we're talking about across the board, whether you're a Navy SEAL, whether you're an athlete in a CrossFit gym or you're Catron? Is that roughly like, is that everything live under that sort of umbrella, or are there more specifics, or am I sort of mishearing the point of it?
No, I would put it kind of like, I think that way you kind of introduce this conversation, with the daily whiteboard. I think there's a lot more to be gained out of this. And again, I'm in the beginning stages, so bear with me, but I believe that there's a lot more to be gained out of this than just the obvious, which it definitely does, is kind of like the ability to in real time mitigate stress levels.
Yep.
But also understand that stress levels are the number one cause for inflammation. I'm saying number one cause. It's one of the predominant factors for silent inflammation in the body, like chronic inflammation, which leads to chronic disease. So unpack that a little bit. Like, doing breath work could actually prevent chronic disease. It's one of the factors that could be associated with this. And there are countless studies that show this out, where people don't change their diet, they don't change their sleep, they don't change their exercise, they do breath work practice, and their health markers turn for the better in massive ways. I'm not there enough to say it's the sixth factor of health.
I was gonna ask. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not quite there yet. I'm definitely exploring it, because I do believe it has massive implications. The other side of this is, when you do breath work and it does lower your stress, when you lower your stress, you get a reprieve from the constant fight or flight that most of us are living in.
Yep.
And that fight or flight, it kind of like hijacks you. Like, you're not you when you are in that fight or flight state. You are running from the saber-tooth tiger, but it's hypothetical now because there's no saber-tooth tigers. You're running from the stresses at work, the stresses of traffic, the stresses of social media, the stresses of your modern day relationships, which your body is going to respond to like it's a life-threatening thing, yet it's not. Mm-hmm. So your body is going to pull all of its available resources out of the gut to the working extremities, because it thinks you're running away from a saber-tooth tiger. If you have that happening, more often than not, your gut gets messed up big time. So a lot of your gut issues could be from the food you're eating, or it could be from just the stress you're having. Now, if breath work is a way to mitigate stress, I don't want to minimize how important that is. If we could solve people's stress levels, usually they would get then enough energy to start eating better, sleeping better, and exercising better. Mm-hmm. It's like, what comes first, you know, the cart or the horse? It's like, that's definitely not the right saying there. Don't put the cart. What comes first, the chicken or the egg? That's a better one, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it is like, if you do breath work, is that going to allow you to get yourself in a situation where you don't have this chronic inflammation, your joints don't hurt, you start losing weight, and your lungs start performing better, and you can get better control of your mind, and all of a sudden you feel like more alive and more free and excited for things? And as you start to do breath work, the nice, awesome side effect of that is you fall into a meditative state where your ego dissolves. And I don't mean ego in terms of like, and I'm very excited to, this 100-day journey has also been a 100-day meditation journey. What I don't mean by ego is like, I need to be right, and I'm the best, right?
Yeah.
It's ego in the sense that you are walking through the world with a imaginary operating system that doesn't really exist. It's more like the Matrix than anything else. And if you can gain access and you can start to pull on the thread of the ego, you start to dissolve the ego and you start to see reality for what it actually is. And what I mean by that is, we are pattern recognition machines. Our subconscious has been built into us so that we are freed up to do and navigate the world in other ways, so certain things can just happen on autopilot. You've gotten to the point now where you can drive to work. You don't drive to work. You work from home. But people can drive to work without thinking about like gas pedal, brake, shift, stoplight. That means stop. Car slowing down in front of me. That means slow down. You just do it on autopilot so that you can do other things. You can think about other things while you're like, what are you having for dinner? What's work going to be like? You can think about other things. Unfortunately, that creates a false reality for a lot of us in a lot of different ways because we've built these pattern recognitions that aren't true. What I mean by that is we're both walking down the street together and we hear a dog bark. My heart starts pounding. My pupils dilate. The hairs on my, I start going fight or flight because I was bit 3 times as a kid. Mm-hmm. That dog barking means like warning, look out. Where you grew up and every single time you came home, your golden retriever started barking when it heard you. And it means love is waiting. You hear that and like the warm and fuzzies come over you. Mm-hmm. The reality is a dog is barking. But our pattern recognition, our operating system is guiding us through a reality that isn't real. And once you can start to pull back on that and see it for what it is, example, like your wife says, hey, can you help with the dishes? Okay. If you grew up with a very controlling mom, you hear that and you go like, there she is trying to control me again. Like my wife is always trying to tell me what to do. She's not going to tell me what to do. Like meanwhile, your wife is just asking if you can do the dishes. Like versus you grew up with somebody that you grew up in an environment where there were no dishes, that you were totally solo. You were on your own. Like you had to fight for every single thing, tooth and nail. Somebody asking you to help with the dishes is like the greatest thing ever. It's like, oh my God, yes, I get to be a part of something. I get to realize that, yes, we have this amazing thing. So we all interpret the world in a way that's not really the world. Mm-hmm. And that also causes us to create these fears and anxieties of an imagined future that is not going to come to fruition. But because our fears drive us towards something, we go, yep, see, I was nervous about that. And there it is. Well, it's because what you look for, you see more of. Hey, Patrick, you're going to buy a new Camry. Do you want a white one or a black one? All of a sudden you see Toyota Camrys everywhere you go. It's a frequency illusion. And these self-fulfilling biases drive us towards that. Well, through breathing, which leads to meditation, which leads to an awareness of the ego and melting of the ego and a raising of your consciousness, opposite of ego. So I think of it kind of like on a spectrum. One end of the spectrum is like unconsciousness, like comatose, like coma at the lowest level. But next would be like mindlessly scrolling through social media, like high eyes half open, comatose state, or like flicking through the channels, not really paying attention to anything. To like the next one is like ego, which is like judging, pass, fail, fear, resentment. The next one is like more like just thoughts. And the next one is like kind of being come detached from your thoughts because your thoughts are not you. And only through like meditation, I don't say only. Meditation is a really strong practice to bring that to light. And you start to see these prisms that you've navigated the world with, which don't serve you anymore.
Yep. You had mentioned when we started, and you'd mentioned it before, that you used or you worked with a coach to do the Wim Hof stuff. I wonder if you can maybe walk us through like why a coach? What was the value of that? Maybe even so much as like, well, what was that process look like? Were they just there to give you some tips and tricks? Or like, why a coach?
Yeah. So like anything, I think a coach speeds up the process in anything you want to do. Like if you want to learn to play guitar, like you can fumble around for 6 weeks or you could take 6 lessons, right? So that was the why. And the honest answer to that was some of our members and friends were working with this coach to help our friend navigate Lyme disease. So because you can gain access to your autonomic nervous system and help cure things. So they were working with one. They invited me to one of their Wim Hof sessions. So it's exactly what you think it would be. Dim the lights, the bongo music comes on. But the cool part is it's not like, okay, now release your mind. It's this bro from Brooklyn that works with MMA fighters. He comes in with a man bun. He's like, and he talks the whole time through like this and this tonality. He's like, all right, let's start breathing. Okay. Breathe in and out. Inhale, exhale. And it's just like, it's not foofy at all. But what he does is he teaches you how to do it. One hand on your belly, one hand on your chest. Inhale fully, try to expand your belly, and he kind of guides you through it. And he says, like, now let's bring some intention to it. Let's bring some intention to your inhales. Exhale, and he'll time it out for you. And the cool thing is, so the way Wim Hof goes, and it's the thing I'm most comfortable with talking about now because it's the one I practiced for a while. Again, a while in with an asterisk next to it, is it's 30 to 45 powerful breaths. And the way Wim Hof says it is, if you're listening with kids right now, pause, like volume down, but he just says, he doesn't care how you do it. He's like, just breathe, motherfucker. You know, so it's like, so just breathe. And the idea is don't bring judgment to any of it. Just breathe. Like, he doesn't care if you're breathing through your nose, through your mouth, or anything else. I found that breathing through the nose matters most. I start off with really aggressive breathing, and Wim Hof was really hard when I first started this because it was everything I had for every breath. And what you're trying to do is oxygenate the body. So you're bringing more oxygen in, more oxygen in, more oxygen than you've ever had before. And then on after 30 to 40 big inhales with and then after the last one, exhale and you hold your breath. And when I first tried this, I'd never worked with a coach. I just tried to hold my breath for as long as I could. So I'm in the gym when I try this for the first time, and I set a stopwatch, and I'm in the back room, and I take a couple breaths, and I breathe out, and I hold my breath, and I hold it, and I hold it, and all of a sudden, like, the head starts pounding, the burning in my lungs and my throat needs to swallow, and it becomes really tough, and I'm like, all right, hold it, hold it, hold it, hold it for 10 more seconds, 10 more seconds, 10 more seconds, hold it, and it's like excruciating, and I click my watch, I open my eyes, I look down, and it was 17 seconds. And I was like, again, like asthma, and I just know, like, I can't do that. So then I do this, a round of Wim Hof, and I do it again, and I hold my breath, and it was like 34 seconds. I was like, whoa, that changed in 2 minutes. I doubled it. Having done this for 100 days now, I usually fluctuate somewhere between a minute 15 and I've held my breath now as high as 245, which is a massive difference from being able to hold it for 17 seconds. But the beautiful part about holding your breath is not the goal of how long you can hold it, is you'll love this because you love this term, is the stillness that's created when you hold your breath. You literally don't even have, there's nothing. And sometimes, like, you'll feel your body change temperatures, like your hands will start to tingle, your feet will get tingly or cold or hot, your chest will get hot or cold, and it's different times. You'll start to maybe see geometric shapes behind your eyelids. In other times, you can't do it because you're chasing it too hard and you're judging it, and it's like this constant battle. But it's this really cool experience of so anyway, getting back to your question of working with a coach, he helps guide you through that whole process of, he'll time it out. He shows you what those breaths look like. He demonstrates them. And then he guides you through some intentionality behind the practice. So it's not just sit and do what you want to do. But what I've actually found is I like the unguided ones even more, because it truly allows me to kind of experience it the way I want to experience it that day. And then after we do that is, you've gained access into how to control your fight or flight mechanism. And then what we did is we jumped in a cold plunge. So where we went, they have a tub. It's literally a refrigerator that they flipped on its side that keeps the temperature at 34 degrees. Mm-hmm. It is gnarly. It is like, no. So you get in and immediately it stings you. It's stinging. And then your body starts to jackhammer. It's just like, and through that breath process, you can control the jackhammer and you control it. And then you get out and you do this, like, kind of like mantra-y dance, to, like, to get, like, blood flowing back through you. And you get so energized from it. It's really pretty fascinating.
That's interesting. Have you seen, or what have you seen as it relates to transference into the gym, both for yourself, and then maybe we can kind of squeeze in how and in what ways is this affecting your athletes too? Are you noticing whatever, you know, whatever it might be, your workouts are better, your breathing and workouts are better, whatever. What does that look like?
So big disclaimer here is, for people that might not be listening to this in real time, we are towards the end of a pandemic. So I've been working out with a mask on for the last, 6 months at least. It's really hard to gauge where I am from that aspect of it through this process. Yep. What I will say is that I wear a Whoop. So I can measure my respiratory rate, how many breaths I take in a minute. And that has decreased throughout this time. So my resting respiratory, meaning my lungs are getting stronger. So I'm getting more oxygen in. I will also say, while I feel a little stuffed up today, it's spring and a little bit of allergies, I've gained access to, like, literally I spent this is without exaggeration, my entire youth and adolescence never breathing through my nose. And I can do that now, which is kind of neat and interesting. Mm-hmm. I've done some form of breath work with my athletes for many years. We started breath work in some form or fashion, but it was more in terms of a mindfulness approach. Mm-hmm. We did it before our training sessions. And we've done that since about 2016. Recently this year, we've done a Wim Hof session once a week with all of the athletes. We've also done forms of box breathing. And I do believe that there is carryance over to improved performance. One of the ways to explore that is a Wim Hof thing that he does is do a max set of push-ups. Mm-hmm. And let's say you get 22. Then do a Wim Hof breathing cycle and then hold your breath. Don't breathe at all. And do as many push-ups as you can. And even though you're more fatigued from already having done a max set, most people will exceed their previous number.
Yeah.
Because you've oxygenated your whole body.
Yeah.
I never used to be able to swim from a length of a swimming pool underwater.
Yep.
I can do that very easily now. After a Wim Hof cycle, I can't do it just jumping in the pool.
Yeah.
And it's something that we're going to continue to explore and expand with our athletes, for sure. I've done it with the CFNE members as well in a regular class.
Oh, interesting. That was going to be one of my questions is, again, knowing that it's early and that maybe this hasn't quite fit into the five factors, you know, becoming a sixth factor. But do you imagine a scenario or a way that breath work becomes kind of like nutrition in the world of an affiliate or in the world of a gym, in the sense of like, it's important and we talk about it and we do stuff around it.
I do. Yeah. You know, like Heather's gone so far. I haven't done this yet because my nasal breathing isn't as strong as hers is right now, but Heather, my wife, for those that don't know, has done sleep tape. So has all of our neighbors. So our neighbors, we've rolled our neighbors into this thing and just putting a piece of tape over your lips, a vertical piece of tape over your lips while you sleep to encourage nasal breathing. And what's really interesting is people that do that don't get up to pee as often. There's glands that get accessed and turned off by the form of breathing that you're doing. So there's a lot of behind the scenes things that go on, kind of like nutrition, right? Nutrition is not just about looking better and performing better. There's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes in terms of the different systems that regulate the body that can benefit from good nutrition. Same thing from good breath work.
Interesting. And how long, like a session, you know, you've been doing it for 100 days. How long is a session? Is it
so a normal
like
one,
like a
for
meditation
me,
session?
Yeah.
Like 15 minutes.
Yep. So a normal one for me is, and I think this is pretty standard practice. So we did with a coach, it was longer and we'd go through like, 5, 6, 7, 8 of those cycles. A normal practice for me is 3 of those cycles and then meditate for as long as you want to. A cycle generally being about 90 seconds of breathe in, breathe out, upwards of 2 minutes. And then again, somewhere between a minute to a 2 minute hold. So think about each one, if they're on the, you know, about 3 minutes per cycle, do that 3 times. That's only 9 minutes. Usually you get into a little bit more and you want to breathe a little bit more and hold a little bit longer. So it might be 10 or, and then I usually, after that last breath, you are in a really nice quiet place. and meditate for another 5 to 10 minutes. So it usually ends up being about, I would say my average is probably about 18 minutes, long ones being 28 to 30 and short ones being 11 or 12.
And do you do them first thing in the morning? You do them wherever you can get them or
wherever I can get them.
What's worked for you?
Yeah, wherever I can get them. So the hardest one for me is right after a workout because you're a little short of breath.
Yep.
I really like doing it on the weekends. I do it with Heather. Heather's done the same practice with me along the way. It's a nice kind of thing that popped up through quarantine. Yep. So my favorite ones that I do is Saturday mornings, after morning routines, after getting kids breakfast and all that stuff, before my workout. So we usually do it around like 9 o'clock on a Saturday is when, you know, if on a Saturday, I usually get up around like 7 or so.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So, starting to wrap up, how would you recommend folks start this, right? If they haven't had any experience in it, maybe they've heard of Wim Hof, but they've never really dipped their toes into it. Obviously you got a coach, but probably there's maybe a step before that. What would you recommend? I know there are a bunch of apps, but I also know that you're not an app guy. So how would you recommend folks start?
Wim Hof does have an app and that's probably, I don't have it, but I do think that probably would be the most, strategic place to start. Where I go now a lot of times is just, the number two search engine in the world, YouTube.
Yeah.
And YouTube Wim Hof breathing method and just kind of listen to him, maybe grab some podcasts with him on it. But otherwise just jump in and experience it. Wim Hof guided, breathing on, on YouTube. Other than that, the book Breath would be another place I'd highly recommend. Cool. It's kind of people in our space would love it. It's a little mind blowing.
Interesting. Okay. And then I assume that the goal for you is it wasn't a 100-day challenge. It's something you're going to keep doing.
No, it was a 10-day challenge. So we were like, hey, let's do this for 10 days and see what happens. Yep. And, success. Awesome. It's hard. Cool. It's hard not to do it now.
All right, cool. My friend, thank you. That was great. That was, I think, a great primer for breath work. And I think if folks want to check out those resources, we'll leave them in the show notes to find them easily. But thank you, Ben. That was fun. Thank you, everybody out there listening. Thank you for your ratings and your reviews. We'll be back next week for another episode of Chasing Excellence. You can get every episode of Chasing Excellence wherever you listen to your podcasts or on YouTube. Until next time, thank you for listening.